Hello, everyone. It's official. It's Her Game is back. And I'm absolutely pumped about all these upcoming conversations I'm going to have with the female leaders in gaming and esports. And we're kicking off with a big time guest, Xu Sun, Director of Data Science and Analytics at Gameloft, a Paris-based game development studio focused on mobile games and since recently doing cross-platform productions. So welcome to the show, Xu.
Hello. Hey, Dominika. Thank you for the invitation. Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We've actually had a chance to meet in person with Xu at a game data conference in Belgrade last year, where we were both speakers. And I got to say, the room was packed during your talk. So it was one of these moments that inspired me to get back to It's Her Game. Because immediately after seeing your presentation, I felt that we need to record an episode with you and get more people to hear about your work and the role data plays in it. So to start, can you tell us a bit more about what you're currently doing at Gameloft?
Yes, sure. First of all, thanks. It's flattering to hear that. I'm also happy to speak at the Data Science Conference last year. It was a great conference. Happy to meet you as well. So hi, everyone. I'm Xu. I currently work as Global Director of Data Science and Analytics at Gameloft, a gaming company. I lead two teams. One team is data science team, focused on building predictive models and doing a bit of R&D as well. Another team is focused on marketing analytics. So focused on analyzing data for our marketing team, for our user acquisition team, and seeing where the incremental impact come from.
Yeah, that's quite a lot to start with, leading two teams on the global scale. So kudos to that. And we're just at the first question, you know. But what would you say in this case, leading two teams at such a big company? What would you say is the role of data you're in charge of, and both of your teams in game development process at Gameloft?
Yeah, so we always propose position ourselves as the team that gets the value out of data. So rather than transporting data or storing data or understanding data, we're trying to share with our stakeholders where exactly is our opportunities or where we could improve from. So that's where we think is our role in the company. The organization of the teams get changed a little bit over time. Right now, I would say it's more a hybrid model. I just shared I have two direct teams, but the actual model is also we have local data analysts embedded together with their local game teams as well. That with a dashed line to the central team, we have cross-track talks, knowledge share sessions, to encourage these communities within our company. So that being said, we are still exploring the mode. So far, we feel the hybrid model is really suiting us as a company that has a lot of local studios rather than the HQ in Paris. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great to have someone so close to the game development process and also like hands-on with the specific games, right? So you kind of have a chance to have a specialist on the title, but then also like exchange this knowledge across the studios.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really necessary to be close to the game teams because you can know what's going on in the games, what events are currently on. You can see all the caveats as well when you do data analysis. And this is one of the big lessons we learned. And right now we established the policy that we always hire game DA to embed it with the game team themselves.
Okay, so that's I think that's a really, really important thing to take away from that, because across different companies, like data is obviously a big part of game development, but it depends on the platform and it depends on the style of the game publisher, how much they look into the in-game data and the performance, and how much they cross-compare across the different data sets, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting looking at it from Gameloft perspective, because like so far you've been known for majority of the time that you did operate in the past as a mobile games development studio. Mm-hmm. And as you've mentioned once, we had a talk, had a chance to talk before, you're now more of a cross-platform game development studio. So what would you say characterize Gameloft's approach to the use of data in game development, given the context of your operations?
Yeah, so I would say there's many two big categories where data teams is involved in the process of game development. The first one is to help the game teams to leverage both internal and external data to establish some benchmarks for our teams to use as passing gates. What does this mean? For example, when we pass a gate of alpha or beta, let's say, we need some kind of KPI to know, is our games doing good when it comes to player engagement? Is our games monetization doing well when it comes to generating revenue on a daily basis? And this all needs some team, a neutral team, ideally, to establish those thresholds for as target or guidance for our game teams to meet. And that's where our team come into play, because we have very rich internal game portfolio data. We follow all our past creations from start to end, and we can leverage a lot of data to establish those thresholds that fits specifically to the game's needs. This is the first category, and it's a quite important one, as you can see, because it as to some degree determined the destiny of our new creations.
Yeah.
Some creations, if we really think is far away from the benchmark we are generating when the game started, then for the game teams, they need either to really improve a lot that KPI, or we need to move on to the next project.
Mm-hmm.
The second category is to find out the product market fit, because not every single game turn out to attract the players in the market. Maybe there's not enough appeal of the game itself. And there are different tests we can perform. There's qualitative test and quantitative test. The qualitative one would involve, for example, user research. For example, CMI team, consumer market insights team, to perform some surveys to the potential player space, right?
Mm-hmm.
There could be also a quantitative way, which is sometimes we call this marketability test. So you test out your creative and your assets from the game, a very initial idea, leverage Facebook, leverage channels like Google to test out them to see, okay, how much is the KPI you are going to generating just by showing the wide audience an idea of the game. And leverage that, so you can know, okay, maybe my idea could really have a potential because it has lower CPI, because it has generated much appeal of people, you know, feeding the surveys either in a qualitative way or clicking the creative in a quantitative way. So I would say this is how we involved in the development phase of the game.
It's so interesting because it's so easy to just assume that there is a data team, you know, analyzing data. But then you start to dig in and you understand that digging deeper, you can find like so many different facets of the same, let's say, sector or contributor to the game development process. And from your perspective, does it depend on the genre, or is there like a general statement? Do you think that quantitative research can deliver complete insights without qualitative one, and or qualitative without quantitative, or do you need to have both?
I'm definitely advocate for having both.
Mm.
Because either one, you are going to introduce some kind of bias anyways, right? You know, surveys are only, you get the survey because people are willing to answer in the survey. People who don't want to complete the survey, you don't get their feedback at all. And for quantitative parts, it's also biased towards people who generate those data in your game already. And like there wouldn't be a perfect tracking whatsoever. So you always need to complement those two different studies to conclude the story out of it. And I would also say, you know, you mentioned a very good point. Game general is quite important. Mm-hmm. We already have our know-hows from our portfolio, and we are lucky to have a very diversified portfolio. We can compare different games to different game types with our internal data, and we can see very clearly there's already very big difference when it comes to engagement, when it comes to retention, when it comes to monetization, right? So we always need to be very cautious in that. And that's why for our data teams, we need to work very closely with our product team to get the product knowledge as well. So to make more sense of the data rather than just working silo and only focus on the data itself.
Yeah, of course. As you said, it's very easy to get biased. And I think it's also easy to get biased if you look at the results of one game, which, I don't know, the genre can be very favorable in terms of the retention, but then the in-apps are not that big, like in-app purchases, right? And then the other one may have users who have very short lifetime, but they have like very big value over that lifetime. And it's like very hard to set KPIs for different genres using another one for as a benchmark. I think that would be my thought, right?
And how to leverage internal data and external data?
Exactly. Because you probably can also use resources that are not necessarily coming from your games, right? You can use like an external report or any sort of metrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do get sources to get some external benchmark as well. And to use them requires data expertise as well.
Of course,
we are not using exactly the same tracking system, right? Definition of KPIs might be different. However, we are more interested in the trends and in relative comparison, rather than the absolute value itself. Yeah.
Do you have, and can you share, any external source that you particularly like once you're looking for any benchmark information from the market?
Yes, sure. For mobile games, we use Sensor Tower data a lot, and we also check data.ai. The company shares some white paper, shares some public data there as well, and it's quite interesting to read them. For PC console games, right now, the source is not that clear. We do read, for example, Newzoo's white paper as well.
Yeah.
And I think, well, if you have a good source to go, it would really be nice, because right now we really want to see a reliable data source for PC console games benchmark. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel there is a bit of a demand in the market. And as for mobile, you have really good sources, as you've mentioned, that cover also like the very detailed and very rich data points across the games. And for the PC games, I feel like majority of data that's available is mostly geolocation or some demographic data. There's very little about the behavior in the games, especially if these are live service games. You only maybe get information about the number of downloads, but very rarely you get any information about the behavior in the game after the user gets the game itself. That's my reflection on the topic.
Indeed, it still remains a challenge. I think maybe there are some startups, companies already aware of this opportunity, but due to the fact it's so hard, this ecosystem is very exclusive on each of the big platform sides. They don't usually disclose a lot of data about their games, right? So they might have the difficulty from there. But I think SteamDB is a nice open source tool there to look into. It's a bit biased towards the PC gamers. Nevertheless, it's quite open, quite transparent. You can follow all the trends start from the beginning of the game release. So it's quite nice to take a look there as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're working on a PC console gaming company,
that's a good one. I agree. There is also one website that's not that well known, which is called Video Game Insights. I don't know if you've ever used that one, but if don't, I highly recommend. They're slightly smaller. They're not that well known, but it's a really cool source of information and insights on video games. It takes a bit more digging and manual work to get to that, but that's what it is with all these like less commercialized or less polished platforms. But pretty cool insights can be derived.
Copies that. I would definitely try it out.
Cool. You know, speaking about data, like there are so many different types and there are so many different sources you can get this data from. And like in the end, you need to bring it together and look for those patterns and try to find some sort of logic in all this big world of information. Is there like any standard toolkit for you? What sort of software do you and your team use on a daily basis to work with big data with so much information?
Yeah, we use tools like when it comes to data, we use, for example, Snowflake. We also use Looker as a data visualization tool. I'm aware that our BI team use tools like dbt, Airflow, to perform the orchestration of data pipelines and to have the markup definition of our data models, to have the lineage being able to showcase to, for example, data analysts and data scientists. When it comes to the program language, I would say SQL and Python are almost the top two languages the teams are using right now. And sometimes they do use R, but just to access a certain type of R libraries to perform those financial analysis or time series analysis. Besides that, I think that's still exploring like new tools here and there.
But yeah.
That's more the standardized and mainstream tools and languages the team we're using right now.
That's a lot of tools. And you've mentioned Snowflake. That's an interesting one for me from the perspective of thinking about like cross comparison of different data sets. So is this what you're using Snowflake for most? If you can share like, are you using that to cross-compare between different datasets or standardize the formats across different studios and compare these? What's like the main purpose?
Okay. Snowflake is more for storage and people who access data.
Okay.
It's a relational data warehouse. It's a cloud data warehouse as well. I think Gameloft is a bit lucky. It's because Gameloft used to use a central and internal tracking libraries.
Oh, nice.
For all our games. So we have a lot of standardized tracking across different games. And I know this is a privilege some companies do not have, especially you're looking at a company with a lot of M&A, right?
Yes.
Merge and acquisition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for Gameloft, that's the privilege we get. We do have past historical M&A companies whose games are not run by, tracked with Gameloft's internal tracking libraries. Those, till today, we still didn't merge it or migrate it because the effort is just not justified the value. So we still let those games keep their own track events. Instead, we only implement the minimum core events to those games. For example, what we call launch resume. We want to see every time the players launch the game, there will be an event being triggered. So it's very, very basic, right? With this very basic event, we can already compare retention, apple to apple. We can already calculate engagement metrics like average sessions, like time spent. Those are how we are really standardized a lot on the tracking side, even though we have a rich portfolio of games. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that about Gameloft, and you guys are really lucky because everyone almost I talked to, and maybe, you know, actually once I think about that, maybe that is coming from like the mobile games background of Gameloft, because that's, you know, the data analytics and tracking of in-game events like much more advanced in mobile games than desktop games, for example. So that's definitely your huge advantage when it comes to tracking the behavior across different platforms, even. Very cool.
Okay, good to hear that.
I also remember from that presentation that you gave, that keynote in Belgrade, you had some sort of a triangle framework that you've presented. Could you tell us a bit more about it? I think we've briefly touched on some topics that are related, but I'd love to have a refresh on this and share that with the audience.
Yeah, definitely. So this triangle framework is under the context when we talk about marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, if you look at the gaming industry, especially free-to-play games, a game's success is not only determined by the quality of the game and by whether, you know, the player enjoyed the game or not, found it fun or not. A big part of the success of a free-to-play games is determined by whether you have a successful marketing, mm-hmm. successful, profitable marketing, scalable marketing activities or not. And a recurring question continue to come back to the analytics team is, how can we measure the impact of our marketing activities? When it comes to mobile apps, is relatively easier when you talk about, what is my return on ad spend of my user acquisition campaigns? There's attribution, there's MMP solutions to help us with those attributions so we can know exactly what is the revenue we get from the players who install our game from based on user acquisition ads, right? Of course, it's getting more challenging with iOS privacy policy introduced back in 2021. And Google Play is going to have a new privacy policy coming this year as well. So everything is going to make it more challenging. What does it mean? It means that we know our marketing activity has impact, but we cannot know exactly how much because we lose track of the exact attribution. What we can do is to help our marketing teams to what I call flying blind. You know, mm-hmm. when you are facing a bad weather, you have to fly blind. What it helps you is you can have different tools, and all of those tools, you know, it wouldn't be accurate, it wouldn't be precise, but those tools are like the cockpit console for the pilot to fly blind. They can still get something useful from the tracking, which you know will be partial, right? They can get it from incremental analysis. So looking at the total uplift of your marketing activities in a certain country, in a certain time, compared to the baseline or compared to a group of controlled countries. And this is what we usually recommend our teams to do, mm-hmm. is to test based on geos. Do not test a global event because it's hard to measure the incremental out of it.
Hmm.
There's also this marketing mix modeling that is coming to play. And there are more and more vendors trying to provide solutions on MMM. And MMM is never going to be as granular as attribution. But on the other hand, it's going to give us on a high level how it's going to perform from the big channels, right? The speed of credits. So based on those three tools, it forms the triangle. So to remind, you still get attribution. Attribution is still useful. Mm-hmm. We also need to look at incremental more and more as well, because you want to see it's not cannibalizing your other channels. And you have MM model, those statistic model, to give you a high level big picture in the big directions. And I try to inform our marketing team is that where you are, the truth, the ground truth you are searching for, although we don't know where it is, but it's going to fall under this triangle. You know, it's less risky to look into your actual performance like that, given a framework. It's less blind as well. You know, you might not be as accurate as always, but you are also not completely blind. And what I believe we need to accept for the future being is that we need to test and learn a lot. Due to that, we will lose more and more attribution, and we still need marketing to, you know, our marketing dollars to make sense for the product as well. Yeah,
I agree. I think it's a very powerful approach in general, because you don't try to, like, you know, at all, like, you don't try to bend the reality to yourself. So you're not trying to follow your bias and be like, okay, like, we're gonna only follow attribution, for example, and that mm-hmm. will give us, like, the golden truth. Now you're like, you know, you're humble, you're like, okay, we don't know everything, so let's, you know, let's tighten this triangle the most, so we have, like, a few options that are most likely to happen, and mm-hmm. then you can look at that, but you have much more informed viewpoint. I think it's very, very interesting, this approach.
Yeah, I think the key is here is managing the expectation.
Exactly. You know, on many levels.
Yeah. Once that is managed, I think things will be more, you know, people would adjust to it, because they realize, okay, unfortunately, we cannot live in a perfect world, so we need to make compromises. But you know, we need to continue. We need to continue to be able to optimize and to test. The learnings are going to be gold. In every single step.
I agree. And speaking of which, can you share an example of insights coming from data that you and your teams analyzed, which turned out to be maybe extremely useful for the game development team?
I now need to think whether it's extremely useful.
Well, this can be biased. This can be from your standpoint.
Yes, it can be biased.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, one of the very useful analysis we did for our game teams, not necessarily for development, but also for production, is something super simple. And you can find this funny. So we have games live on Apple Arcade, right? Apple Arcade is Apple has a program to run games, but you need to subscribe to Apple Arcade to play the games, and the games on Apple Arcade does not have in-app purchase, does not have ads, is a very safe environment also for the kids to play as well.
So
you have a premium experience of a lot of games which you only need to subscribe for Apple Arcade. We have games published on Apple Arcade as well, and we do generate some revenue from there on weekly basis, that Apple would share with us on weekly basis the revenue from our games. Because we start to have more and more games on Apple Arcade, we noticed that different game would generate different level of revenue. Okay. However, how Apple Arcade share with us is completely a black box.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it could be based on some modeling or Apple size. Of course, you know, wouldn't be disclosed to the wide public. So what we do is run a simple linear regression based on that, and has some interesting takeaways I wouldn't disclose here.
Of course, of course.
And it, well, as you can imagine, linear regression is probably the lesson number one when it comes to statistical analysis, right? It's a very simple model. We didn't do a lot of data cleaning, also because the data we can access is very limited. With Apple Arcade game, you cannot track up to a real player level, the data. You have to own in based on anonymized data and aggregated data as well. So data we can use is also very limited. It's up to our interpretation as well. But in anyways, we tried different very simple models, and we pick one of the models that we believe makes the most sense. We share the insights with the game team. They have very good takeaways, and actually really help direct their directions of the future updates, enrollments of game features to those games, which is quite nice, because otherwise they might think of other features that they want to add in there, which could only up to someone's guess in the team, right? And now we are back with more solid analysis.
Great. Sometimes the simplest solutions are the best, you know. We're trying to, like, reinvent the wheel, when sometimes it's important to just plug the wheel in the first place. So, pretty cool. Very cool.
I would say, on top of my mind, the the piece of analysis that our game teams or marketing team often found useful, it's often very simple analysis. Mm-hmm. It's based on very simple methodology. I'm not saying that those that use more complicated and sophisticated methodology would not work. It's when it comes to communication, when it comes to impact business teams' decision, simplicity is a very golden standard here. Yeah.
I agree. And what do you think? Well, speaking of standards and what's important in working with data, what do you think are the key skills of a good game data analyst?
I would say the first one is to be really immerse yourself with the products. A good game data analyst will never be too far away from the game itself. You need to play the game and understand almost everything from the game. You know, you need to understand new users' experience in the game, and you also need to understand for people who reach the late stage of the game, what's their daily routines. The second one is probably curiosity. Even though you understand a lot of the game, you play the game yourself, you still need to be curious and ask a lot of questions. Why do people acting like that? And trying to find the root cause of it. A lot of the signals or KPIs are on the surface, but you need to dig deeper in order to understand what exactly caused players, for example, to leave, to pay, and to do different activities within the game. And the last one, if I have to add, of course, is the hard skills. Just with curiosity and good sense of games, still didn't make a good game DA. Sometimes not even an independent one. So hard skills still is very important. Be able to write very clean and good SQL. Mm-hmm. Be able to build visualization that speaks to your business audience. Those are the basics sometimes people forget, but they are still very, very fundamental to on a path to become a good game DA.
Yeah, I agree. I remember some experiences working with big data teams that I got the graphs and they were very impressive, but I did not know where to start analyzing them. So like finding this common ground or like finding this way to translate data into consumable digests, you know, something that inside something that anyone can understand. I think so. Mm-hmm. It's really important. And is there anything you're particularly excited about when it comes to the future of data in game industry and its impacts on games?
Yes, definitely. So I think data coming to play in all the different stages of either game development or games in production. We can optimize the games in production a lot by analyzing players' behaviors inside the game and always find new ways to segment the players into different groups and not just simple segmentation like are you a paying user or not. but let me give you a more concrete example. We have the game Disney Speedstorm. It's a racing general game, right? It combines the Disney IP brand into the racing players' experience. It can be quite fun, and it's not just racing, but also to social with your friends as well. That you can play offline with your friends. You can play online competing with different players. Or if you're not a competitor, you know, there's a lot of nice storylines you can follow based on all the different Disney IPs, right?
Okay, cool.
So naturally and organically, this game will cater to very different type of players. And only with data, we can validate that. And indeed, there is very what we call hardcore racers, right? Mm-hmm. And the benefit of having a data team is to bring this seemingly very qualitative concept into a quantitative definition. How do you define who is a hardcore racer? Is the type of racer that who never use what we call the racing helper that makes a bit of an auto drive. They never use that, turns out. They never use that after they enter late parts of the game. Mm-hmm. And those are also the players who compete very aggressively and who finish a lot the multiplayer races. So basically, you can compete races that are only in the single player mode, or you can play a lot multiplayer mode. And they are overwhelmingly playing multiplayer mode. And those are also the players turn out to naturally have an average higher level of skill, racing skill, compared to other players. Because there is one type of player that who could, you know, level up based on grinding more and based on trying to buy more different boxes, different racers in order to improve. But there are also racers that even without leveling up their characters a lot, or even without those boosters, their win rate is constantly high. And so by analyzing all those data, we found out a very good segmentation definition to group them out. And there are players that are very casually in the game. So the happy moment in the game is more like unlocking a racer, a new racer. And you can see immediately from the moment they unlock a racer till their next race ratio is very high, which is a very good proxy indicator that they have a good moment, good experience unlocking a new racer. And this is what keeps them in the game as well. So you can see even with a game like this, it's very interesting to always find that your games are appealing to all the different players in the world. And they all come to play the game, maybe with very different motivations. And how to serve those different motivations would be a key factor and key driver to future success of the games. So this is what we are trying to help one more and getting more insights back to our game teams for them also to understand, okay, how to prioritize the game features in the future roadmap. Who will be our key player base to address? And this is really, really important because as you can imagine, for game teams in production, the backlog is always longer.
Yeah.
What you can is always bigger than the resources, right? So prioritization become key here. And how to define your prioritization, you can get a lot of hints from the data.
Yeah, 100%. Like to understand your players' behavior in game and really monitor that closely and then contextualize it with different data sets. I think that's super powerful in the future. For any game publisher, any developer to have an understanding of. So thank you for your hard work and making that possible.
We're still helping. We're still happy. Definitely keep an eye on the game if you're interested to see the different changes over time. Maybe some of them are from originally from a piece of analysis that from my team.
Yeah, exactly. So if you were to give a piece of advice to anyone interested in working in game data analytics, what would it be?
Start right now. You have the open source data somewhere, right?
Yeah.
We do talk about that. Some of the data is already open source. You also have a lot of platforms that you can leverage those platforms to run some scripts and to learn how to build a simple linear regression model and make use of it, make sense of it as well. So start right now and never be shy to apply for different positions. We know this year might be a bit hard when it comes to getting a job in the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. However, nevertheless, I see there's still a lot of companies hiring for those positions for either game DA, product DA. They're hiring, they're eager to have a DA joining their board to help them understand more of their game, their players getting more value out of the data they stored. So don't be shy to start there and practice with a bit of hard skills as well, soft skills.
It's
always helpful. Yeah,
I agree 100% on the education aspect. Like even, you know, working at Grid, being at Grid, so the game data platform, we have open access program. So we enable access to data for free and people can just, you know, download it and start playing with it. So it's exactly there. You have the resources there. You can start working on it. And I think like having something tangible as an example of what you can develop and like what you're capable of is also such a good add-on to any resume that you're sending afterwards, that you have a little project on site that showcase your skill. I think it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Building your own analytics portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is so underrated because normally portfolio is something people think of once they think creative designers, etc. But with data, I think it's very much the same thing. You need to showcase your abilities to work with data. It's a sort of an art as well, you know, to know how to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Okay. Thank you very much, Siyu. It was great having you and having a chance to talk to you and share your story and a bit of insights on working with game data. So thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you as well. Thank you for the invitation. Yeah, I wish you a great podcast. Future episode success as well. Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you for kicking off this year with me and being a guest. And to all the listeners, thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions or guest recommendations, you can DM me or reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Dominika Maria Schott. And you can find the link to my profile in the episode description. And I'll also post Siyu's profile in the description. If you have any questions to her, you can also reach out, right?
Yes, for sure. It's always a pleasure.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And see you soon. Bye.
Cheers.